All right, kids, you can blast off to kids' church. Morning, everybody. Please turn your Bible to Luke chapter 15, and we're going to wrap up our sermon series called Close to My Heart. Just a quick recap over the last 3 weeks, we have seen in Luke 15, Jesus revealing to us the heart of God. He tells us three stories about the heart of God. He tells us three stories which he uses to illustrate the heart of God. First, it's the shepherd who loses the sheep, and he leaves the 99, he goes for the one, he carries it home. And then it's the lost coin, the woman who loses one of her 10 coins, and she searches diligently to find it. And then it's now the prodigal son who goes away and in reckless living squanders a third of the father's wealth and then comes back. And all of this is to show what it means, what it looks like for Jesus to receive sinners and eat with them. That was the accusation. The Pharisees were accusing Jesus of receiving sinners and eating with them. And he tells these three stories to say, this is what it's like for me to receive sinners and eat with them. And now the story takes a turn. And now Jesus is illustrating what it means to not receive sinners and eat with them. Now Jesus is illustrating what it's like for the Pharisees to grumble about Jesus receiving sinners. This story is addressed to the Pharisees and the scribes. He is speaking to the Pharisees and the scribes, but the first three stories were addressed to the sinners that he's eating with. And now I can imagine Jesus lifting his gaze to the men who are standing in the corners, scolding and scoffing and condemning. And Jesus is now speaking to them. It's addressed to the longtime churchgoer. It's addressed to the person who always thinks that the message is addressed to someone else. And let me just say before I move on that it was addressed to me this week. I could not finish my sermon prep on Friday before I had to repent to someone to whom I had been full of pride and full of self-righteousness. And so please let me make it clear that this is not me looking down at you, churchgoer, and saying, shame, shame. This is me saying that this is a trap that we can easily fall into. In Luke 15, verse 25, Jesus now turns the corner. He says, now his older son, the father who has lost the younger son and now has come back, now his older son was in the field. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I go out into the field and I work hard all day, I can get judgmental of those who don't. There's something about hard work that just makes me think, man, how lazy people can be, right? There's something about it that breeds this sense of self-righteousness. Think Mary and Martha. Jesus was at a home, and Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet listening, and Martha, what is she doing? She's busy hosting Jesus. And all of that hard work caused her to have a sense of self-righteousness. Jesus, look at all the work I'm doing. You tell Mary to come help me. There's something about being in the field, about working hard, about being where he ought to be. Right? Where was the son? Where was the younger son, the prodigal son? He was in a distant land, not working, but squandering. Now here's the older son, who's been in the field all day, doing what he ought to do, earning a profit for the father, doing hard work. In verse 26 and 27, Jesus reminds us of the position of the father so that he can bring into greater contrast, so that he can reveal to us how far the elder son's heart is from the father's heart. Verse 26, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. You know, so he drew near the house and heard music and dancing. So the party is underway, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed a fattened calf because he's received him back safe and sound. So where is the heart of the father? What is the father doing? The father is rejoicing and celebrating. He's having a huge party. It's loud. It's extravagant. The father is celebrating the return of his son, who is this man's brother. He celebrates because that prodigal son is back safe and sound. Now look at what the older brother does. We see this outburst of emotion. But it's not, thank God he's back home safe. Let me go in and celebrate with these people. Now, his outburst of emotion is anger and jealousy and pride and condemnation and indignation and even contempt. These are sure signs of self-righteousness. That when the father is celebrating, the son is condemning. Look at what it says here. But he was angry and refused to go in. How many of you have had a family gathering and either the person refuses to come and it's this big elephant in the room, or they show up and someone else comes and they leave? We've all been there, right? We've all been there. We had a Christmas this year like that, right? Where's this person? I remember. Anger and jealousy, and what do we feel about that? It's immature, right? It's immature. So he's got these anger issues. Listen to what he says to his father in verse 29. So it says he was angry and refused to go in. And verse 29 says, his father comes out. He answers his father. Listen to how he answers his father. Look. He says, look. Let me tell you. When I say look to somebody, I'm coming down on them, right? Look. That's how he starts the conversation, to his father. Look. He shows contempt towards his father. This is important. He shows contempt to his father. Then what does he say? He says, look, these many years I have served you. Now, there's two Greek words that we can translate serve. One is diakonos, which is the word for deacon, and that's a noble, honorable service to the Lord. The other is doulos, which is slave. He chooses the harsher, more lowly word to describe his relationship to the Father. He says, look, all these years I have slaved for you. Slaved for you. Then he says, I have never disobeyed your command. I have never disobeyed your command. Look, I've slaved for you for years, and I have never disobeyed. You think he honestly had never disobeyed? No. He somehow conveniently overlooks all the many times where the father has forgiven him. And how, oh, by the way, that slaving for the father meant access to the father's house and the father's refrigerator, right? And the father's bed and the status in the community. This man is a wealthy man. At least that's what Jesus wants to portray. He's a man of means. And so the son, he has this feeling of entitlement. Of jealousy. He says, I've slaved for you. I've never disobeyed your command. And yet you've never given me even a goat. A baby goat. And yet you killed the fatted calf. Listen to what he's saying to the father. There was a man who wrote a book called The Prodigal Father. Or Prodigal God. We get the word prodigal from this passage because of the term squander. Prodigal means wasteful. So the son was wasteful. It was the wasteful son, the prodigal son. Now listen to the accusation of the elder son. Listen to what he's saying. He's saying, you are a prodigal father. You have wasted your resources on this undeserving son. That's what he means by you've killed the fatted calf. That fatted calf was like the choice of the litter, choice of the herd. It was the best one. And the son, in his contempt and condemnation for the father, because of all the years that he slaved for the father, and because he's never disobeyed a command, he says, you are wasteful, father. Contempt for God is the fruit that grows out of the self-righteous soil. That's what happens when we are self-righteous. When we view our relationship with the Father as we have slaved for you all these many years, and look how perfectly we've kept your commands, look how clean we've lived our lives for all these years, what happens is that contempt grows towards God, the one who we are supposedly serving. He starts with contempt, look, and he ends with contempt. He says, this son of yours. What does that mean? He says, this son of yours came. Who was this son to him? This is his brother. He didn't say, when my brother came back. He said, when this son of yours. How many of you have kids and they're your wife's kids when they mess up? Or they're your husband's kids when they mess up, right? We do that in jest, but this guy was serious. What is that doing? It's shifting blame. Listen to this. The elder son is blaming the father for the sin of the brother. He's disassociating himself from the family, and he's blaming the son. I just want you to think about this. Jesus is saying, Pharisees, longtime churchgoer, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you in your self-righteousness, in your years of slaving for God and never disobeying the command. You can come to blame God, the one that you claim to be serving, the one that you claim to be obeying. Now, it might be easy and perhaps sort of the hip thing to do to sort of leave it right here and to speak harshly to those who might identify themselves more closely to the Pharisee than to the prodigal. But Jesus doesn't stop here. And this is remarkable. This is something that has really penetrated my heart over these last couple of weeks. Jesus certainly has some very harsh words to say to Pharisees elsewhere. But here, when Jesus is explaining the heart of God for people, he doesn't speak harshly to the Pharisees. Now, this has been eye-opening for me. This has been revolutionary for me, and I hope it is for you. He's expressing the heart of the Father, and there's something remarkable that happens. He's looking at Pharisees. He's looking at men who will soon demand that he be crucified. Men who have been dogging his tail for years. He's looking at them in the eyes. And look at the appeal. Look how he describes the heart of the Father. In the second part of verse 28, it says, his father came out and entreated him. Whoa. How did the father respond to the reckless sinner? He ran to the boy with love and compassion and received him back into his home. How does he respond to the elder brother in his self-righteousness and pride? The exact same way. With love and compassion. With love and compassion, he goes out to where the boy is and he begs the son. Look, the son has made it very clear that his relationship to the father is what? Slave to master. Obedient to commander. Jesus could have had the father command the son to come in. He could have said, the father sent a servant and commanded that the elder brother come in. But remember that this banquet is a picture of heaven, and no one is commanded to come in. No one is commanded to obey their way in. The Father himself, just think about that. The Father is throwing this amazing party. His son has come back. His joy is full. And this son, who is acting so immature and so self-righteous and full of himself, is outside pouting like a little baby. The father could have commanded him to come in, could have commanded him to go to his room, or could have just ignored him altogether and just said, just let him be. But he doesn't do that. This is incredible. This is an incredible message to the Pharisee. The father goes out to the Pharisee and begs him. Now, what does he say? Verse 31, he said to him, so the father goes out, he begs, the son resists. He says, I've slaved for you. I have never disobeyed your commands, but you have never given me a goat. And yet you kill this fatted calf, you despicable father. Verse 31, he said to him, son, child, not slave, not servant, not idiot, not viper, not blind guide. These are words that Jesus uses for the Pharisees elsewhere, but not here. When Jesus is describing the heart of God, he has the father say to the elder son, child, son. In one word, Jesus destroys an entire theology held by the Pharisees. The Pharisees, he does not refute what the son has done. He doesn't come back and remind the son of how he's paid him to work, of how he's always had access to all of the herds, that every single day they kill a goat and eat, that he's had access to the house, that he could have as many parties as he wants to. He doesn't refute that. It's not about what the son has done. It is about how does the father want to relate to you. Not as a slave, but as a son. This is important. I think this is a key question. This may be the most important question of our theology. How does God want to relate to you? As a slave or as a son? And folks, it is so easy to get that truth at one point in your life and to slowly drift into slavery. Jesus is telling us something very important here about how the Father intends for us to relate to Him. It's a gentle word. It's not a rebuking word. It's not a harsh word. It is a gentle word. Son. And what is the essence of our relationship? The Father says, Son, you are always with me. The Son was not happy, was not satisfied with being with the Father. He enjoyed the Father's presence daily. He was with God. He was in relationship with the Father. But that was not satisfying. What did the Son, relating to the Father as a slave, how did he relate to the Father? As a means to an end. What he really wanted was to get out of there with his friends. That's what he really wanted to do, was take the goat and go and party with my friends. And what the Father wanted was for him to treasure being with Him. It should have been enough to be with God. I'm afraid that there are Christians who slave for God and who never, quote, disobey a command. And they come here not because they enjoy being with God. They come and they work because in their pride and self-righteousness, they think that's how they keep good standing with the Father. They view God as a means to an end. I want to go to heaven, and so if I want to go to heaven, I have to stay right with God, which means that I have to be part of a church, I have to work, I have to slave, I have to stay in the field, I have to relate to God as a slave to a master. But the Father says that the essence of my relationship to you, son, child, is that you are with me. In other words, God is our treasure, not a means to our treasure. We get to go to heaven, not for the streets of gold, but to be with God intimately, fully, completely. But he felt trapped. He wished he could go away. I think maybe some of you, possibly, maybe not in this room, maybe hearing my voice. We post this on the internet. Maybe someone listening, maybe you're in here, maybe you're not, would think, I want to get away. But if I get away, I might lose my treasure. I might be looked down upon. I might be humbled and humiliated. I might not be able to look down on other people if I get out of here. He felt trapped. But in his pride, he slaved away. The Pharisees and the scribes, they couldn't understand why Jesus would eat with sinners, nor how God could receive them, because they had a completely different mindset. Jesus is looking at a crowd of people. He's got sinners who know they're sinners. They're prostitutes. They're drunkards. They're adulterers. They know they're sinners. And Jesus is eating with them. And in the back of the room, there are people who have slaved away for God. And they are condemning Jesus. And Jesus is saying that you cannot understand why I eat with sinners, because you relate to God in the wrong way. This is just as much a message for us today as it was almost 2,000 years ago. They thought, we have worked so hard to get to where we are, to enjoy the status that we have, the life that we have, the life we've made for ourselves. How dare you imply that these filthy sinners will come in at the 11th hour and enjoy what we have worked our entire life for? I need you to test yourself here. I need you to test yourself here. I started the sermon by saying that the Lord convicted me of this. Maybe he's convicting one of you of this. It is so easy to get caught up in self-righteousness and pride because you are working for the Lord. And I think that was the thing. I think that was what was going on. I was hearing from God. I was doing God's work. And I allowed myself to get so wrapped up in pride that when someone confronted me, I thought I couldn't possibly be wrong. This sin nature that we have, even those of us who have been clothed in righteousness, the blood of Jesus Christ forgiven, that sin nature, Paul says, still wars within us. Test yourself. Ask yourself this question: does the elder son have a point? I have slaved for you for years, and I have never disobeyed your commands, and yet you have never given me even a goat. Does he have a point? Does the elder son have a point? If he has a point, this message is for you. If you can relate to that, if you can say, yeah, I kind of get that. I kind of get how the son can be angry at the father. Because I've been a good boy. And I'm doing the work. And this kid who's been the black sheep of the family, he comes back. What right does he have in here, back in the house? This is for you. It was for me. You're still relating to God as a slave to a master, not as a child to a father. And listen, this theology dishonors God. Because Jesus did not come to say, help wanted. Laborers, I need you. He came to make help available. He came offering help to you. The Father did not send Jesus to enlist laborers. He came to save sinners and make them his children, to bring his sons and daughters back. This theology alienates us from the people that Jesus came to save because it makes us feel, there's this intuition in us that says, if I am to stay in right standing with God, I must work, work, work. And Jesus comes in, he says, no, it's grace, grace, grace. And so it makes us angry and resentful of mercy and cynical towards sinners and cynical towards people who eat with them. Hear the Lord's description of self-righteousness. It is the world's deadliest sin. Because guess what? You can be prideful even in your humility. That's how dangerous and deadly this sin is. There was a song by Weird Al Yankovic. It's a parody on Gangster's Paradise. He calls it an Amish paradise. And he says, I'm a million times as humble as thou art. Guys, that's what our heart says. Even in our humility, we can be prideful. I think of the plank-eyed saint. I preached on that a few years ago, where Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees, They rebuke people for a speck of dust in someone's eye while they have a 2x4 sticking out of their own. I felt that this week. Jesus dealt with this sin more frequently and more harshly than any other. He can be tender and gracious with the adulterous woman, with the drunkard, with the demon-possessed. He can be tender and gracious with them, but when he speaks to the contemptuous and the smug and the complacent and the self-righteous, his words pierce and burn. It's so dangerous a sin because it's so deceptive and so easily justified. We can always justify our self-righteous. We can always point back to a passage that says, be holy because the Lord your God is holy, and you're not holy, but I am. There's always something in our position that feels right, that looks right, that if you go to the book, can be proven right. And that's why it's so dangerous. But it's not about the letter, it's about the heart. And that's what I couldn't get for the weeks leading up to this Friday. It was about the heart being deceptive and wicked. And the Father broke that in me, and I pray that He breaks it in you. He's not after your slavehood, your slavery, your labor. He's after your heart. Verse 32, Jesus leaves the invitation out there. The Father says, it was fitting to celebrate and be glad. For this, your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. The Father is speaking to the elder son. He's entreating him. He's begging him to come in, but not as a slave. Not come in and sulk and pout and slave for me and obey the command to come in. He's saying it is fitting, it is right to celebrate. I want you to come in. I want you to celebrate with me. It's right for you to celebrate with me, Pharisees. It's right for you to celebrate with me, churchgoer. It is right to celebrate. The invitation is left out there for the Pharisees. The same invitation to the sinner as to the self-righteous. He entreats the son, come in. Be part of this celebration. Just imagine, as the worship team comes back, just imagine the scene. Jesus is looking at hard-nosed, callous-eyed, bitter, contemptuous men, and he is saying, child, child, come in. He says to the sinner, come in from this faraway land of reckless living. And he says to the self-righteous, come in off the porch of pride. Inside you'll find grace and forgiveness and fellowship with your Father. But it's not your hard work that secures your place at the banquet. Sinner, it's not hard work. Self-righteous, it's not hard work. It is receiving grace. Grace. The Father is calling. The Father is searching for the prodigal son. Maybe some of you today are prodigal sons. You know you're a sinner. You think, well, this message couldn't be for me. I'm too bad for that message that God would call me and allow me to come into a banquet. But that same message, that same invitation is made available to the person who says, well, this message couldn't be for me. I've worked too hard for this message to be for me. The message is for you. Come in off the porch. experience fellowship of being with God, not working for God, but being with God. We offer you a time of invitation. We chose this song, One Thing Remains. The love of God remains. The thing that remains is that God is still calling you who have been in church for 40 years. But your whole time you have slaved for God. You really want to get out, but you think, well, if I got out, then what would that make people think? And where would my standing be? And I wouldn't get to heaven. And that one thing remains. God the Father still calling out, come inside, son. Come inside. And that one thing remains, that sinner is out. The Father is looking and searching and saying, come back. Come back home. Sinner and saint, it's the same. One thing remains, his love for you. As we stand and sing, this is an opportunity for you to come kneel at the altar and pray. Maybe some of you need to repent. Maybe some of you want to pray with me. It's your time.